Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt live on this Tuesday morning. And that music means we're joined by Admiral James Stavridis, retired United States Navy, former Allied Supreme Commander of NATO, former head of Southern Command. Good morning, Admiral. How are you?
Doing great, Hugh. How are you?
Good concern. And I want to begin. I'm putting up on the Salem News Channel a map of Europe for the benefit of the Steelers fans. I'm looking at Ukraine. It is bordered by Belarus, obviously, and Russia, and Moldova, and that's kind of Russian two allies, but also Poland and Slovakia and Hungary and Romania, which are NATO allies. And then next to Belarus are Lithuania and Latvia, and poor old Estonia is up there just with Russia as a neighbor and Latvia. As Allied Supreme Commander, former Allied Supreme Commander, are you worried about second-order impacts of a Russian invasion on any of these NATO allies and very, very unpredictable events happening?
Of course. And in particular, Hugh, what happens when there is a war in a country? Remember Syria? Before the civil war in Syria, there were 21 million Syrians. Today, there are 7 million Syrians living stably. There are 14 million, 7 million displaced out of Syria into bordering countries and 7 million displaced within Syria. So if you kind of run those numbers and use that as a rough calculus, you're probably looking at around 5 to 10 million potential refugees, people displaced. So there's an immediate refugee crisis. And I think the U.S. intelligence community would say around 5 million. And that is, of course, on top of the political, diplomatic turbulence that would ensue as sanctions would hit Russia. So this would be a region-wide event if Vladimir Putin makes the flawed calculus to invade Ukraine.
So, Admiral, what is your successor in interest as commander of NATO doing right now?
I would guess that General Todd Walters, who is the 18th Supreme Allied Commander, is sitting down with his staff daily, getting an operations brief. He's looking at a big map like the one you just showed, Hugh, except on his map, there will be very precise denominations of every battalion combat team, every corps headquarters, every missile emplacement, every long-range aircraft site, every field hospital. So my successor will be looking at all of those. He'll be in constant contact, by the way, with our allies, sharing that intelligence and information. Different nations will have different slices of the pie. I always say about intelligence, it's not a photograph, it's a mosaic. And everyone is kind of putting the little colored piece of stone into it, and suddenly you see the big picture. So he's assembling that. So number one is intelligence. Number two, he's looking at cyber, what kind of cyber attacks are occurring. How's the U.S. helping Ukraine in terms of cyber? And number three, and finally, he's thinking about his forces. Here, by the way, Hugh, as you know, he's not only the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO in charge of all military activity for the alliance. He is also dual-hatted as Commander U.S. European Command, thus in direct command of about 50, 60,000 U.S. troops that are stationed in Europe and have been augmented in the last week with another 3,000 U.S. troops. So he has a big basket of his own forces he's watching. That's sort of the three touchstones he'll be going through on at least a daily basis right now.
So, Admiral, I want to remind our listeners that in war, bad things happen. The United States shot down an Iranian commercial airliner once. The Russians shot down, when they were invading Ukraine the last time, a commercial airliner. We bombed the Chinese embassy accidentally during the Balkans campaign. Can stuff like that happen to a NATO ally? And what will your successor, the general, do?
Yes, it can happen. And it can, frankly, as you point out quite correctly, happen both ways. And, you know, we're often fond of saying, fond might be the wrong word. We often say that the Cuban Missile Crisis was the most dangerous moment in world history. It's certainly up there. Another one was when the Russians shot down KAL-007, the Korean jet. And in that instance, people on both sides went to hair trigger nuclear alert. So if you're the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, what you're worried about is that kind of miscalculation going one way or the other. The Russians shoot something down, we shoot something down. A stray missile intended to hit some target in Western Ukraine ends up in Slovakia. And then suddenly you have an Article 5 situation. An attack on one is an attack on all. So you've got to be thinking about what are your responses militarily, putting up more missile defense, increasing cyber defense, moving units around so they're in less vulnerable positions, military response. But you also have a responsibility to the political level to give them that clear picture of what's happening so we can avoid these miscalculations. By the way, I'll close on this, but 1914, we all remember this, right? The Guns of August. How did that start, World War I? It started with an assassination in a dusty corner of the Austro-Hungarian Empire in Sarajevo, of all places. That miscalculation led to a loss of control of the ladder of escalation, and thus Europe sleepwalked into a war that killed 20 million people. By 1918, the Russian Empire is gone, the Austro-Hungarian Empire is gone, and the Ottoman Empire are gone. So big doors can swing on seemingly small hinges.
The Kingsman movie in theaters now has a wonderful, if somewhat flawed, recreation of the Guns of August. I think people might find it entertaining since there isn't really a movie about. You have to read Dreadnought or something like that, or Barbara Tuchman. So let me ask you a specific and then a general question, Admiral. If you are the commander-in-chief of the Poland, and you probably know whoever it is, the Polish army or entire military structure, and Russia sends some tanks accidentally across your border en route from Belarus, who makes the decision to repel that incursion or to fire back, NATO or Poland?
The short answer would be both. So Poland, obviously, sovereign state, sees military activity, an invasion. And that would be defined, in my view, as the imposition of armed forces for political purpose without the consent of a sovereign state. I would say tanks crossing your border would be exactly that. So the Poles would be well within their rights immediately to warn the Russians, to demarch them diplomatically, on scene, to be transmitting on international frequencies. If the Russians did anything but turn around and depart immediately with apologies, you're Poland, you're well within your rights to light up those tanks and destroy them. Well within your rights. NATO, at the same time, is beginning the process of Article 5 consultations. The Poles would appeal this to the North Atlantic Council in Brussels. And this can go very swiftly, Hugh. It sounds bureaucratic, but it can move in a matter of 24 to 48 hours. And suddenly, Russia, you've got not only the Poles lighting up your tanks, you've got the whole alliance doing so. I think if Putin were incredibly foolish enough to cross a NATO border, you know, Ukraine is not a member of NATO, but if he were to cross a NATO border, think Estonia would be the most likely candidate. I think the full weight and force militarily of the alliance would slam like a ton of bricks on any Russian forces in the region.
So, Admiral, this is the qualitative question, not the quantitative. How confident are you in Russian command and control? And by that, I mean, we bombed the Chinese embassy. We have the best air force in the world, right? And we bombed the Chinese embassy by mistake in the Balkans action. And we screwed up Libya and we shot down. So we have the best command and control and we shot down civilian airliners. What's your worry that Russia doesn't have that good a command and control? A former senior national security advisor told me Putin's really got 150,000 frontline troops. That's about it. That's why Germany doesn't worry about him, because unless he goes to nuclear war. How good is his command and control?
It's better than it used to be, and that's not a satisfying answer. But
no, it's not.
let me explain. During the Chechen wars or during Afghanistan in the 80s, we saw an incompetent, ill-prepared army that was really a bunch of pirates in the field. A lot of them, overwhelmingly, it was a conscript army. That has all changed. Putin has rebuilt the Russian armed forces. It's a much more professionalized army. Many more people come in and stay in, kind of like our model. Maybe 30-40% are now professionals. Unfortunately for the Syrians, they've been practicing command and control now for 5 years in Syria. That's been their training range, if you will. So it's better than it used to be. It's still, if the United States is an A, and as you point out, we make mistakes, Russia's maybe a C, maybe a C plus.
Okay, that's worrying.
Coming,
that's
it ought to be.
So let me conclude this way. Many years ago, early into Iraq, I went down to Camp Pendleton to go through their journalist training course with their kids that they were training to go over to Iraq. And the chief of staff to General Mattis, a wonderful colonel named Clark Lethane, wonderful guy, helped start the Semper Fi Fund, his wife did. Clark said, civilians just don't think about second order impacts. I mean, he wasn't yelling at me. He's just saying, you guys just have no idea. What are the second order impacts I'm not thinking about here, Admiral?
One thing we haven't touched on, I know you're well aware of it, but I'd really call it the third order impact. If the first is the invasion, the second is the military response to it. The third order are the massive economic sanctions, which impact economies across Europe, obviously impact Russia, but there are many knock-on effects that will affect Europe very broadly, and ultimately the global economy as well. And then fourth order effect, if the Russians, again, are foolish enough to invade and try and occupy a big tranche of Ukraine, there's going to be a Ukrainian resistance that I predict will make the Taliban of Afghanistan look like a bunch of Boy Scouts in the mountains.
Wow.
These Ukrainians are tough-minded people. They don't like the Russians, contrary to Putin's propaganda. They will fight. We will arm them. Boy, let's hope we don't get to that point.
Oh, last question. They say Kiev will fall in 72 hours. I mean, Medvedev, Zelensky would run, right? I mean, to go somewhere else.
Think Charles de Gaulle going to Paris in World War II. There'll be a government in exile. They will no doubt be working the resistance. They will be financed and supported by NATO in that instance. They will also, by the way, control every Ukrainian embassy around the world. Those people aren't going anywhere. Putin needs to, your point, Putin needs to think through these third and fourth order effects, because the long range picture of him trying to occupy Ukraine, a massive country the size of Texas, 45 million people, boy, I wouldn't want that problem.
Admiral, thank you for this intro. That ought to be on every network. That's great background. I appreciate it. It's helpful to have the former Allied Supreme Commander of NATO on. I appreciate it, Admiral. Have a good Tuesday.